Welcome to Silence the Mind Cluck. I'm your host, Maria T. Finch, and I'm super glad that you're here. Get ready to quiet that mind and reap the rewards. Welcome, everyone. I'm Maria Finch. I'm an intuitive strategy guide, and I'm thrilled to be here today with Jessica. Jessica, welcome.
Oh, thanks, Maria. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me on the show.
Sure. So glad to have you. So to start out with, tell us a bit about you.
Yeah, sure. So I had a sort of mixture of different jobs early in my career. I did take lots of opportunities. I was a bit of a workaholic, if I'm being honest. But I ended up being an executive for about 10 years. And during that time, though, I'd reached 35 and I was on my own, not by design, but I really wanted to have a family. And my sort of desire for a child was greater than the desire for a relationship. So I decided to take the road on my own. And I had a child through a sperm donor when I was 39.
Wow.
It was just amazing. And, best thing I ever did. And, but I think that was a big decision. And I worked through it, and I've been really lucky because I had a really supportive family and a supportive group of friends. But obviously I was on my own, so I was continuing, my career as an executive. And actually having a child just really impacted kind of how I felt about it, what I wanted to do. I wanted to work differently. And I went through a whole kind of series of lots of mind, mindset challenges. Describe them as, and over the years through trial and error, really trying different things, surrounding myself with kind of different people, making new connections, looking at how I could work differently, also just me thinking about what was important to me, really helped me to get to a point where actually I felt calm, I felt confident, and I was able to kind of make it work for me. I think we're all different. There isn't a blueprint, one size that fits all. But and where I've got to now is, I've met so many people during my career who have the same challenge, and I've ended up kind of, just supporting them, being a friend, being a sounding board. And it kind of came up about, why don't you coach and try and support people? And make that a bit of a goal. So I've been giving it a go, and now I really work with female kind of parents, executives, or those kind of in middle management that are really trying to get a bit of balance in their life so that they can live life on their terms rather than feeling like they're just permanently at the just responding to others' demands and not really doing what they want to do. So yes, that's me.
Okay. Wow. Well, so I have a whole bunch of questions for you. So first question is, when you decided that you were going to have a child on your own, did you face a lot of mind chatter around that?
Yeah. So it's a really good question because actually I didn't.
You didn't? And wow.
I didn't, but the mind cut came later when I'd had my daughter. And I had lots of feelings of, guilt because I wasn't always there for her. I was very reliant on nannies and childminders. I was fortunate because I could have that kind of support structure. I was always comparing myself to other mums. I was always worrying about, was she losing out because of X, Y, and Z? And actually, in hindsight, it was really interesting because one of the things I did do was think about a time when perhaps I would have had some concerns and worries, etc., and I didn't. And actually the decision to go it alone, I was so focused on my goal and the outcome that I wanted that I think I actually shut off quite a lot of what I think people would think you'd start worrying about. I was I'd got finances in place. The thing I was worried most about in that decision was what people would think. And so I suppose I had a bit of a strategy around that, in that I tested it, you know, with my mum, with my siblings, and with friends. And, you know, it was all really positive. I think, you know, my mum was a bit like, okay, this is new. You know, and she's 89 now. So this, right. generation, totally different generation. Yeah. But she was just wonderful, because she went away and thought about it, and she came back and said, actually, if you want to do this, then I'm 100% behind you. So I think I had a bit of mind cluck at the beginning, but once I felt financially stable, mm-hmm. I felt my family and friends and the people whose opinions I matter to me, were good. I actually didn't have so much mind cluck. It came much later, after I'd had my daughter.
Right.
I think I'd got that amazing thing that I really wanted, and I was so determined that I just kept focusing on that, and I didn't really get deviated. But it was afterwards, when, you know, I'd had her, I only had a sort of 3 months off work, mm-hmm. and I had to get back to work, that there was a bit of a realization of what I'd done, and actually, you know, oh right, yeah, okay, life is never going to be the same. And it was this whole thing around, I'm a single mum, you know, have I done something selfish? And I get that perspective. But actually, you know, she was so wanted, she's so loved. And, you know, she has a big family, in that she's got, you know, I'm one of five siblings.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
so that makes quite a big difference. So the mind cut came later. But one of the things I did do to try and work out how to get rid of some of this mind cluck was to go back to a time when it might have been there, but it wasn't so much. And that was about focusing on a goal.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say, is like, what an incredible thing to have learned, that just by giving yourself a really laser focus, you can shut down mind cluck. So go back to that and use that again?
Yeah, I did. So I used a few things. So I definitely went back to that. And it was the focus, and I didn't have a focus. It was just, I was in it. And,
right.
You know, I was trying to work the same way that I'd worked for having a child, whilst feeling fairly jet lagged from lack of sleep.
Yeah.
And so what I did was, there was this, actually, what is it that I want, and why is it important to me? Because I think ask ourselves those questions very often, you know, you have to take time to reflect. So I very much took a step back and was like, what's important to me? What kind of role model do I want to be for my child? So, you know, what kind of parent? I don't know, I'd never thought about what kind of parent I wanted to be. What did I want to spend time on? So this kind of goes into that balance piece. So, you know, a lot of people I work with, they say, well, I just want work-life balance. And I'm a bit, it's just not two-dimensional. You know, work is one thing, but that encompasses career, it encompasses learning and development. You know, life is not just family, it's friends, it's entertainment, it's what a contribution. And so I went through a whole process of sort of saying, what's going to help me feel confident, feel that I can be my best self, both as a parent and at work. And so I did go through quite a lot, and then lots of iterations, and, you know, some of it worked and some of it didn't.
And how exactly did you approach that? Were you journaling? Were you working with people? What were your steps? Tell us about some steps.
Yeah, so I used a technique, and you can get it online. It's called the Wheel of Life. It's really really straightforward, but it just for me, those sorts of tools, they just help you to ask the right questions, because sometimes you're just not asking yourself the right questions.
Right.
So I was asking myself, so how do I just maintain everything as the same? And that was the wrong question. The question was actually, what do you need to change to enable you to to be who you want to be and to achieve what you want to achieve. But first of all, you've got to work out what it is you want to be and what you want to achieve.
Right. And I think that really gets down to what are your values? Like most important to you in a day, you know? Yeah. So it's what kind of accomplishment do you want, sense of accomplishment do you want to have at work, as a parent, as a friend, as a daughter, as a, you know, whatever. So kind of like outlining that. So making it a much more holistic approach as opposed to how do I keep juggling all these balls all the time?
Yeah, exactly. So they actually then support each other rather than bump up against each other. And actually, you know, I work with people and they'll say, well, this part of my life's fine. And then you say, oh, okay, great. Tell me about it. But how's that impacting this, and this? And they're like, oh yeah, okay. It's not quite going to work. But I think that's through I reflected a lot. And, you know, I continually reflect about, so I do this process kind of sort of almost 6 monthly. And it's about checking in on yourself. Am I still feeling in a good place? Is this still working for me? Does any of it need to change? And the more you do it, the quicker the process becomes, and even you start doing it automatically. So I think it's a really helpful process to learn that you can then bring into kind of how you live your life. And the other area for me, so I did a lot about that and reflecting. But the other part of my sort of the mind cluck, I suppose, was human instinct means, you know, we tend to look on the negative. We're always saying what isn't there or what's wrong or etc. And I think I spent a lot of time thinking what I wasn't giving to my daughter what I wasn't giving to work. And instead it was about flipping it and saying, what is it that I am actually providing?
That's so that powerful.
I'm achieving. Because I think you can, and so some things, I do a gratitude journal. And actually that's helped me, and doing it consistently. I think if you are going to do a few things, if you can try and do them consistently, that's where you get the real reward from doing this. Because you could do meditation, you could do gratitude journal, you could do journaling. I do quite a lot of health things, but that works for me. But it's people finding those two or three things. And I just say, you know, 15 minutes a day of positive habits can really make a difference to how you feel about the day. Or you might bring in some habits before you've got a particular type of meeting or a particular type of activity, and it can really help you to perform a lot better. So I started doing a gratitude journal and thinking about appreciation rather than expectation, and actually doing a lot of thankfulness work. So before I did gratitude journal, I was having a very bad time at work. It was just 24/7. I was literally, you know, it was 8 o'clock in the morning. I left, dropped my daughter's childminder, went to work, came back, picked her up at 6:30, got home at 7, put her to bed. I continued to do, and it was just no way to live for anybody.
Yeah, that sounds tough.
And I was really struggling. And actually all I did was change one small thing. And that was, I used to get the bus home from work, and I used to sit on the bus and go, right, instead of thinking about everything that's going wrong at the moment, just think about three nice things that have happened today. And it might be that somebody brought me a coffee. It might be that the sun was shining, or that actually I'd helped somebody, or somebody had helped me, and they just made the day a bit better. And I felt, it was nice. I thought, oh, actually, I looked forward to getting on the bus.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's good. And it's so nice to start with just saying, okay, what are three things? Not like, what are 40 things? It's like, what are three things? Because anybody can pick out three moments of joy in a day.
Yeah, exactly. So if that really helped me, and then I did move to sort of doing more of a gratitude journal, and I do it with my daughter. So you know, we will spend a bit of time where I will say, well, you know, what have you been grateful for today? Or what's worked for you today? And actually doing it together is really good fun as well.
Yeah.
So, we do. But I think you have to be careful with habits so they don't become rituals. So I am very careful about, you know, if I'm not I don't want to do the gratitude journal today, it's not a big problem. It's not an issue. But that's been very helpful. And I also do, I think energy is very important.
Yes, I agree.
You know, you can get up in the morning and very quickly go, oh, oh, the day looks a bit, oh, I'm not sure. So I just do 10-minute workouts because it fits with my day. And I'll there's somebody called Joe Wicks, and they do like 10-minute workouts. And there's somebody called Lucy Wyndham Reed, and I do a lot of their sort of stuff. But just doing 10 minutes just makes a big difference in the morning to how I feel. And I've got friends I know who do meditation, and that's how they get to a place where they feel like the day is going to be, they're in a good place to embrace the day. So I do quite a lot of those sorts of little things, and I change them. But my big thing is just trying to do things consistently, because I think if you don't, you know, you're not going to feel like it's made a big difference in a week. But if you do it for a month, it will make a big difference. And actually, you'll start to learn techniques for actually making a difference during the day. So one of the things I have done now is I've got a playlist of music that I really gets me feeling good. And if I've got a very big meeting or a difficult meeting, I'll just play one track, and it just puts you in a different place to go, right, instead of, you know, and you have a bit of a dance around the room and your physiology is just so much more positive. And actually, that's helped me. When I was having the mind clock about confidence in meetings, I was, when things are rocky, everything feels like it's falling apart. It's in your own head. It's the little voices saying, well, you know, I think you're not visible enough at work. And you're not feeling that confident, are you? And, you know, oh, they didn't invite you to that meeting. And, oh, you didn't make it to the board meeting and all those sorts of things.
Right.
And actually, those sorts of quite small little things can just help you feel a bit more confident, and they kind of gets rid of the noise, because you're focusing on the music and you're focusing on the thing, and you're focusing on what you want to get out of that next bit of activity. Again, it's about bringing focus. So I think, yeah, so some sort of, I mean I love little things, because I think when somebody says, you know, you got to go and do a big thing, it you just feel overwhelmed before you've even started. About getting to a place where you feel like you can start.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's interesting. So you've mentioned a bunch of little techniques, and you've also mentioned, you know, everyone has to figure out what works best for them. I mean, one of the things that came to mind as you were talking is, if you wake up in the morning and you feel yourself kind of going like, ugh, one thing that I've found can be helpful is just to pick one thing, just one thing in the day that you are looking forward to.
Yeah, you're excited.
And then kind of put your focus there to get yourself up and going. And I think there are, like you said, there are so many different techniques out there that people can try. I really do think that it's very much a try it and see what works sort of situation.
Each
of us is different. Yeah.
I think that's what's important. You know, I've definitely, you know, I've borrowed bits from different rules, and I quite like the 5-second rule. You know, if you can, you know, if the alarm goes off, if you haven't got up in 5 seconds, you're probably not going to get up. So get up. And I do quite like the 5-second rule. But I think it is important to find what works for you, and also brings out the best in you.
So in your day-to-day life right now, like say that you're facing a really difficult meeting or some other challenge, what's the first thing that you do? Do you immediately go to music to prepare yourself, or what else might you do to prepare yourself for something you know is going to be challenging?
So it depends. So it might be, so I'll choose different music depending on what type of meeting it might be. So if it's a coaching session with someone who needs time and to reflect in that coaching session, because actually sometimes when you coach, what you're doing is people, you're giving people the gift of time.
Sure. Yeah.
They just need that time and space. So actually I'll listen to some kind of music that's more about mindfulness, really. So it's quite relaxing, calms me down so that I mirror more of where they are. If it's a challenging kind of meeting where, you know, perhaps you're doing, you know, contract negotiation or something in a very different context, I would go for quite a high energy kind of meeting. The other thing I will do is I will think about and write down, because I think when you think about things, they stay very much as thoughts. When you write them on paper, they become a bit more real. But actually, when you start scheduling it and saying that you're going to do it, so I do quite a lot of that. So say, for example, I'm quite nervous about doing something new that I haven't done before, or there's a work situation that I haven't been in before, I will actually just take a bit of time to think about, okay, so what is it that's bothering me about this? What do I feel confident about? What less confident? And what's the bit that I'm really struggling with? So that actually I'm just heightening my awareness around what is the challenge. And then think about and kind of brainstorm the challenge and say, okay, well, how can I make that challenge a bit more manageable for me? So that actually when I go into that meeting, I've almost warmed myself up and my awareness is better, and I've got some thoughts about how that I've made it manageable and therefore it's not so daunting. So that's kind of a nice technique. Sometimes it's good. You can do it with a colleague. You know, I think sometimes we work so solo, and remote working obviously has exacerbated that. But I think sometimes you can work with colleagues to say, you know, I've got this, you know, presenting as a class.
Sure.
Everybody really seems to really not like presenting, including myself. Yeah. And I had a huge process around presenting as an executive where I would write a script and I would write it out 3 or 4 times. I'd then rehearse it in front of a group of people.
They were my
trusted people.
Uh-huh.
I would then go back, rewrite it. I'd never sleep the night before, but I got a thing of like, that's how difficult I found it. But going through this process meant that when I delivered, I got really good feedback, and I was like, actually, I found a process that works for me. It's long and it's time consuming, but it means that I come across confident, authentic, but also that I've put some effort into this for my audience, and that actually it's important to me. But that presenting, that was a process that I built at that over, yeah, quite a long period of time. And when I was younger in my career, I made a really big error of presenting somebody else's PowerPoint. I mean, I couldn't do anything bad. It was somebody asked me and said, well, I'm not going to be able to do it, so can you do it on my behalf? And I did do it and I got through it, but I promised myself I would never do it again. And I would just say to anybody who, if somebody says, can you present the PowerPoint, make sure you talk to them and that you can adapt it so that you can deliver it, because it just doesn't work.
Yeah. Oh gosh, what a lesson to learn. Yeah, I think that especially in presenting, and it doesn't matter how you're presenting, whether you're presenting at work or presenting in a personal way, it's like it's got to be authentic to you, or else it's got to be a miserable experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's those, and then your confidence just. My confidence really bombed after that. And I didn't do presenting for a while. And then I moved jobs and I had to present. And this is when I was like, right, I've got to work out how to come across. And people used to say to me, oh, you obviously clearly love presenting. And I was like, no way.
No. Yeah. No. Oh, well, but that's a testament to how effective your process is.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that in anything that we approach in life, when Mind Clock gets really loud, it presents an opportunity to kind of tune in and be like, okay, what's really going on here? Mm-hmm. And you might actually be surprised at what the issue is. Like, I liked how you were saying you would write down, okay, so here's what's good about this. Mm. Here's where I'm not so sure. Here's the problem that I'm really worried about. Because sometimes I think our minds amplify a problem that doesn't really exist.
They do. It makes it huge. And actually, yeah, by doing that, you actually go down to, oh, actually, there's 10 things on here I feel quite confident about. Oh, it's only, yeah, 2 things that are a problematic issue.
Right.
So then I can focus on those 2 things, and then the whole becomes a bit easier.
Yeah, that. And also, I think sometimes when you actually write out a problem, mm, so write out what you're anticipating being a problem, and you try to look at it from through a variety of lenses,
yeah,
you may actually see that it's actually not that big of a problem. And one of the things you can look at is like, okay, what could, if the worst thing happened, what would that be?
Exactly.
And then recognizing it's not that, yeah, bad, and then going, oh, okay, well, you know, if that happens, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. No, definitely. I think that's very, very true. And I think also, you know, that's the talking to your fear. So I was having a conversation the other day with somebody about fear, and I was just saying, look, you can reframe fear as your friend, because actually it's only there to keep you safe.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, mm-hmm, you just need to go and have a conversation with it to say, what is actually, why are you afraid of this? And actually just, and they were like, well, I have a conversation. And I said, it doesn't matter how you do it, but actually just ignoring it, it becomes bigger. So you're better off going, right, okay, I'm obviously afraid of either making myself look stupid or fall out of myself or whatever. But what is it then that you can help your fear get more comfortable with it?
Right. And you can also use it, you can really use it as sort of like a flag system. So you can, yeah, say, oh, there's something else here that I've got to figure out.
Mm.
And use it to turn on your curiosity and be like, okay, yeah, well,
yeah,
why am I afraid of that? And should I really be afraid of that? Maybe I don't really need to be afraid of that. And it just in an automatic response, as, yeah, opposed to an aware, thoughtful response.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. You assume things that aren't actually correct. And I think, you know, you learn. I mean, my sort of thing is actually, you're going to those places of, you know, challenge or putting yourself in uncomfortable situations. Whilst it feels difficult, you learn so much about who you are and actually what you do want to do and what you don't want to do and how you want to approach things, which only then makes things, you know, easier as you go forward. So I think it is about not being afraid to just seeing things as a learning opportunity rather than a sort of roadblock, and this is stopping me. But
right,
definitely trying to get 2 or 3 things that you know will close down the noise for you,
yes,
or boost your confidence so the noise gets quieter, is really, you know, I'd definitely be saying, look, just try to find 2 or 3 things that can help you do that, so that, and over time you exercise that muscle in a way.
Yeah, your absolutely
mind gets less, so mm-hmm, it's it's good.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, so we have blown through our time. And so I just want to say, I wanted to give you an opportunity to say any last thing to our audience, any last piece of advice or encouragement or anything that you would like to mention as a closing.
Yeah. I mean, I just say, if you're feeling stuck, just try something, anything. It's best just to take some action, because that action you might realize that was the wrong action, but it will actually move you to the right action. But doing nothing means you can't move forwards, but taking a small action will definitely help you make a change. So I would just, don't be afraid to make a small, and it doesn't have to be a big action either. I think people think, I'm going to have to make a massive change. You can do, yeah, some really small things to really help you move forwards. So yeah.
Oh, I think that's a perfect last thing to say. Just take a little step. Any little step helps.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jessica, thank you so much for joining me today and for everything that you shared.
Oh, well, thank you, Maria. It's been a real pleasure. And thank you to your listeners. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Take care. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you found this content helpful, please like, comment, and share across your social media. Are you sick of mind clucking up your days? Book a free initial consult with me at mindcluck.com and let's silence it. Thanks and have a great week.